It is a joy and an honor to share in ministry with all of you in so many different ways. We talked about this fall already that each and every one of us is invited into ministry. It's also a joy and a blessing to have another person in our congregation who has been called to and enter into ordained ministry. And that's one of the things I celebrate with my brother Jeff here. Jeff has been commissioned towards deacon's orders. It's a form of ordained ministry in the church that finds itself not rooted in the local congregation, but extending out to the world, which is a very beautiful and important piece. Jeff spends his day-to-day professional ministry working at the Denver Foundation, assisting all sorts of ministries and outreach and other great things in the city of Denver. And we give thanks that you do that on our behalf and most importantly God's behalf each and every day. As a part of his ordination process, he's provisional. He's 1 year in and one more to go. Trust me, they'll say yes. He's awesome. But as a part of that process, Jeff's asked to preach at least once a year and turn in his sermon and other such things. And so we got talking about it, and we thought this would be a wonderful opportunity to share in. So, Jeff, please, bring us the word this morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, friends. Well, as Reverend Brad mentioned, he graciously invited me to preach on this transitional Sunday between Commitment Sunday last week and the first Sunday in Advent next week. And we agreed I'd preach about something related to giving and receiving. And as this Sunday approached and my anxiety about preaching increased, I asked myself that question I inevitably ask: what was I thinking? Then a colleague handed me this book, Give and Take, by Adam Grant. It's actually on the nonfiction bestseller list. Give and Take, Giving and Receiving, No Sermon Idea. I open the book. And the first page starts with this true story of Danny and David, who are two dads at a soccer game watching their kids play. And they introduce themselves, and one of them is an entrepreneur, and the other is a venture capitalist. This is a world way over my head. But Danny, the entrepreneur, turns out isn't just a guy with a good idea. His first startup was acquired by Amazon for $175 million, and his next one was acquired by Motorola for $500 million, I beg your pardon. So Danny pitches his idea to David. They're standing at the soccer game, and David loves the idea, and he realizes with Danny's track record that investors are going to be beating a path to Danny's door, and time is of the essence. So what should David do? Well, he should make Danny an offer, of course, and give him a deadline to lock up the deal as soon as possible, because he's the first one to have heard this, but that's not what he does. He says to Danny, "We'll take as much time as you need, make the right decision." He puts Danny's best interests ahead of his own. Not only that, he gives Danny a list of other businesses in case Danny wants to check him out against the competition. Well, sometime later, Danny calls David and he says, "I'm sorry, but I'm signing with another investor." And the financial terms were just about the same, actually. David's references all said he was a great guy, but it was actually his spirit of generosity that doomed his case. Danny thought David wouldn't be tough enough. The other investor had a reputation for challenging and pushing the entrepreneurs to be better. And Danny said, "I decided to go with my head instead of my heart." Well, David was devastated. He said, "Am I a dope? I guess I learned my lesson the hard way. Good guys finish last." Well, hold that thought. So this book here says there are three kinds of people, basically. Givers like David, who think of others first and don't expect anything in return. Takers, who like to get more than they give, that is, the benefits to oneself must outweigh the costs. And then there are matchers, who kind of keep the books balanced between giving and getting, this for that, strict reciprocity. Now, the truth is, we can all be any one of these in different circumstances, but back to the old saying, good guys finish last, or do they? Well, research demonstrates that givers do indeed sink to the bottom of the success ladder. Across a wide range of occupations, givers make others better off and sacrifice their own success in the process. So if givers are most likely to land at the bottom of the ladder, who's at the top? Takers or matchers? Neither. It's the givers again. Givers can be the worst performers or the best performers. Takers and matchers actually land somewhere in the middle. Being a giver doesn't necessarily make you a sap or a saint. So to finish this story that I started, Danny, the entrepreneur, had second thoughts. He wasn't happy. He had this gnawing feeling he'd made the wrong decision. He actually had to buy his way out of his initial deal, but he called David back and offered him a stake in his business. Turns out David isn't just a nice guy. He's supportive and brilliant. The business is growing at more than 30% a month. Danny is now one of David's many references. Giver does not equal loser. Now, here's another story, really familiar to us. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? And here I am dying of hunger. I will get up, go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, put it on him, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on, and the slave replied, "Your brother has come. Your father has killed a fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." And then the elder brother became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you've never even given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed a fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The parable of the prodigal son, with references to slaves and prostitutes notwithstanding, appears in a succession of stories in the gospel according to Luke on the theme of what's God like, or what is it like to be loved by God. So in this story we have a taker, a bancher, and a giver. And after some dissolute living, the taker comes to himself, I love that phrase, and heads home. He rehearses his speech. "I've sinned, treat me like one of your hired hands," but he never even gets to finish the speech. Because while he was still a long way off, his father, the giver, sees him and runs to him and embraces him. So imagine this long, dusty road and a very small figure approaching in the distance. And how did the father see his son while he was still a long way off? Did he just happen to glance up at that moment, or was he looking down that road many times every day, waiting, hoping, aching for that day when his son would return home? The matcher says, "Hey, what about me? Look at what I've given and received. That's not fair." And the giver replies, "I've always loved you, and I love you still. Today we celebrate our love for your brother who has come home." So I suppose we're probably all the people in this story. If your family budget is anything like ours, we've been taking stock about how we take part in this community of faith with what we have, what we do, and who we are. In some ways, we are matchers who ask ourselves, what do we receive and what should we give? We are also takers who make our long way on that road home to ourselves, and we are, all of us, givers too. Well, just this past week, I've learned even more about the give and take of life. At work, I manage a department of about 10 people. A few days ago, two people from my team were standing outside my office talking in hushed tones. So I look through the door. I say, "Are you guys okay out there? You need anything?" No, they say, "We're fine." A few minutes later, they came into my office and said, "Yes, actually, we do need something. We need you to tell us how we can help you and what we can take off your plate." So I sort of sputtered around. Finally, I confessed something with which I needed help. And later, I was at an office meeting. We were all going around the table, sharing what we were working on. And a different teammate says, "Well, what we're working on is we can tell Jeff is hurting right now, and we're going to step up to help him." And I'm leaving that meeting now, and a fourth person says, "Sure is hard to keep anything on the down low around here." So all of this brought to mind a conversation I just had last Sunday. I was sitting right back there where I usually sit before the worship service, and a friend came up to me and said, "You know, I've been thinking about what you said about internalizing things and not asking for help, and I just want you to know I'm here for you." So once again, I sort of sputtered around and said something about feeling bad about imposing on people and not being able to return their kindness in the same measure. And this friend asked with a smile, "Is that how it's supposed to work?" Well, how is the give and take of life supposed to work exactly? Could it be that it is blessed to give and receive and learn to do both with grace? How do we make sense of these seeming contradictions? Givers are at the top and the bottom of the ladder. We are all givers, matchers, takers. It is blessed to give and receive. Well, I believe this is the paradox and the miracle of how God shows up in our lives. We love and we are loved. We are the prodigal ones hoping to receive love we didn't earn. And we are the parents, always ready to give more love. And so we enter this season of giving thanks and thankful giving. We move between giving and receiving and back again, and we wait with longing and hope for God with us, the God who will watch for us down that long road, waiting to embrace us and welcome us home. May you be blessed and be a blessing. Amen.